Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, besides listening on the radio, how can people find American, how can people listen to AFR?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Tim. We do have an app available for your portable listening device. So if you have an iPad, you have an iPhone or Android, you can download the app for American Family Radio. It's free. You just go to the App Store. And you can listen anywhere you get a signal. You can listen anywhere in the world. You can listen to you and I, Tim, amongst many other scintillating voices that they can hear on American Family Radio.
Scintillating.
We're scintillating.
Never thought of it that way.
You're probably not alone.
I don't know. Probably. If I look up that word, am I going to be happy about that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Scintillating, exciting, well, let me exuberant.
Let me speak to listeners who don't want to yield to the new technology world. Okay?
Yes.
It's time to do it. All right? It's time to get a device that you can listen to AFR on where you don't just have to depend on the radio signal.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. We had a dear lady who, she listened to us for years and years in Arkansas. And then she was originally from New York City, but she married a pastor in Arkansas.
Wow.
And
that's a story.
It was funny, hearing her Brooklyn accent. And she would tell me she's from Arkansas. And I'd go, you ain't always been from Arkansas.
I'm from the Boston area. I married a girl from Mississippi.
True. It happens. Yeah, it happens.
It happens sometimes.
But anyway, her husband passed, and she moved home to New York City. But when she moved, she was such a devout listener to AFR, it just broke her heart that she couldn't listen to AFR anymore. And she's in her 80s, I guess, early 80s. So my wife told her, Allison, she went on one of our tours with us to the Holy Land. So my wife, Allison, told her, you know you can listen on an iPad, don't you? And she goes, on a what? On an iPad. You can listen to American Family Radio on an iPhone or an iPad or an Android.
You're right.
Anywhere. Really? She said, yeah. So her daughter went out and bought her an iPad.
Just so she could listen to AFR?
Yes.
Wow, that's awesome. Well,
yes, so she went out and bought her an iPad, and now she listens to AFR in New York City, even though we don't have a radio station there.
Yeah, because it would cost like $20 million to get one.
It'd be impossible.
Nobody's giving those up.
Yeah, we're now.
But we are in New York City. If you have an iPad or a smartphone.
I'm just saying this because there are a lot of people who say, well, I'm out of the range of AFR when I go travel here or there or whatever, but I'd like to listen to your station. Well, if you'll just break down, get with the technology, I'm telling you, you can listen to AFR on your cell phone or anywhere in the world on your iPad, clear as a bell. That's the reason I ask you to tell us the different ways people can listen to American Family
Of course,
Family
now folks
Radio.
Can also, since we're talking about the different ways, they can listen, they can go on the web. So if you have a computer and decent speed, you can just go to AFR.net and listen live as well. So there are other options.
Right.
If you're not in the vicinity of an AFR terrestrial radio.
And we podcast. So our shows are heard available on demand with our podcast. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to get
For our listeners, Tim, who are just catching up to the technology craze here, a podcast is online at AFR.net. You can download a copy, I guess is a good way of explaining it, of a program. So after this program's
over.
A recording. You want to. After this program's over, tonight you would say, oh, I missed today's issues. You can go download a podcast.
Yes.
So you can put on your iPod and listen to us while you're at the gym, for example.
Yeah. You know, I'm
you're into this technology.
Well,
thing.
No, I'm not. That's if I can do it, you can do it. It's what I'm saying, because I'm kind of a lukewarm on the whole the whole thing, huh? I've never done Facebook. I'm not gonna. And again, I'm not judging people for doing that.
You don't do Twitter.
My son put a Twitter account. I don't tweet
because
I don't think people care when I go to the refrigerator. Okay, if they do, they have a problem.
That's right.
So I don't care to tell the world what I think about everything.
Right.
Or where I'm going or what I'm doing. I think that's just.
That's like if I'm at Walmart. I say this all the time. If I'm at Walmart, I don't care to be there.
Right.
I don't know who else would care.
Who else would care? So
I'm
you're not going to tweet
in line
it.
At Walmart.
I'm going into Walmart now.
Yeah.
Nobody. Anyway, so but I will say this, the downside of technology we all are familiar with, but the upside is the kind of things we just mentioned.
Right.
So take advantage of that. One more thing real quickly before we go to our guest, Dr. Michael Brown. We're going to the Holy Land in March. By we, I mean Allison, my wife, and I are leading our annual tour to Israel. And if you would like to go with us or consider going with us, but you want more information, this is a March 9 through 17. So we're not staying a long time, but we are seeing all the places in Israel, the Holy Land. We're going where Jesus walked. It's going to be a Bible comes to life experience for you. And we'd love to have you go with us. We usually take 50, 60 people on this trip. And if you want more information on this, you'd like to consider going with us. If you're waiting for the world to get quiet before you go to the Holy Land, you're never going to go.
Right.
So just write that off. Just say, I'm never going to go, because there's always going to be something in the news. Israel is as safe a place as you can go. Why? Because they don't play. They profile.
Right.
They take national security and why? Because it's life and death for them. That's why. Israel is as safe as any place you're going to visit. Are things going to happen there? Well, probably. You know, but things are going to happen in Dallas, too.
Right.
And things are going to happen in San Bernardino, and things are going to happen in Orlando. So the world's a dangerous place. But Israel is, relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the world, is a pretty safe and secure place to visit. So I wouldn't go if it was unsafe, and I've been 20 plus times. I have the blessing of going that many times with my dad as he led tours, and I've led tours myself. So the way to find out more information about this March trip is just go to this website, twholyland.com. twholyland.com, or you can order a brochure, and we'll send it to you in your U.S. mailbox. Just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address. 800-FAMILIES, and option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure, and it will be delivered to your mailbox. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Our guest now is Dr. Michael Brown. He's heard Sundays on AFR with the program Line of Fire. His ministry is based out of Charlotte, NC, and he joins us now. Michael, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. How about you?
Doing good. Tim here with Ed. Tell us about your ministry.
Well, there are a bunch of different things that we do. I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus, came to faith in 71 as a heroin-shooting, LSD-using hippie rock drummer. Since then, I've had the joy of bringing the gospel around the world. We've raised up ministry schools, and we have grads serving on the mission field around the world. And I'm always deeply burdened for Jewish outreach and evangelism, so I second what you said about Israel being the place to go and being a safe place to go. And then here in the States, we're always standing for righteousness, for moral and cultural revolution. and addressing the cutting-edge issues. We do it on the line of fire daily and heard on AFR, you said, on Sundays. So normally I'm writing 3, 4, 5 new articles every week dealing with what's happening in the news and bringing a kingdom perspective, addressing it on the radio, and really believing that through the gospel we can see a moral and cultural revolution in America that can turn the tide in the right direction.
What do you, you wrote a column on the what happened in Louisiana and Minnesota with the men who were shot and killed by the police, and then the Black Lives Matter, and then the shooting of the 5 officers in Dallas. You wrote a column about all this. What did you give us an overview of your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I've actually written a couple of columns so far. The first one I wrote late Thursday night when I saw the news in Dallas, and I proclaimed again, all lives matter. And I know for some, they say, look, if one group is suffering, it trivializes the suffering of that one group when you say all lives matter. But it's not one group suffering. It's America suffering right now. And it's one of those times where we need to have the uncomfortable conversations. We need to sit down across racial divides, across social, ethnic divides, especially as the body of Christ. We should be the lead ones in bringing unity and reconciliation. We need to sit down and ask the hard questions. On my radio show, I've had many black callers call in and talk about their experience growing up and talk about how life is for them and how very different it is and how they view the police and different things like that and how skeptical they are of the courts. And these are God-fearing, law-abiding Christians giving a necessary perspective. And then I'll say, hey, let me share this perspective, and we have this concern. And, you know, sometimes it seems that there's a rally when it appears that a black man was killed for no cause by a white cop, but where's the rally when it's a 3-year-old girl in the inner city killed by gang gunfire? Where's the rally? And, you know, so we would talk back and forth. So we need to commit to have the serious conversations and to say, share your perspective. Do you think I have a blind spot? Let me share mine with yours. And then I followed that up with another article where I laid out 10 basic premises. I said, look, I don't care if I offend people. We're right now on the verge of all-out race wars. And unfortunately, I don't believe our administration has helped bring unity. I believe it's deepened the divide for some time now, sadly. But I lay out 10 propositions. For example, the first one, that white Americans sometimes don't see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it isn't there. Another premise, there is a real reason that many blacks are frustrated and angry, and to just downplay it, they're just pawns of the activists, or they're just pawns of political leaders, is to demean. On the flip side, anything that calls for violence against any group is to be denounced, and anything that declares war on law and order is to be denounced. We'll descend into social chaos. So I'm trying to put out things, not caring if we offend both sides, but say, look, we've got to come together, as we've seen in some rallies where white protesters and black protesters have come together and hugged.
Yeah, let me ask you this. By the way, where can people read this, Michael, what you just talked about?
If they just go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org, they'll see the latest articles. And, of course, many of the articles are published on the One News Now website as well.
I guess what is frustrating for a lot of, I would call people who are fair-minded, Americans, Michael, is when you see something happen in the news, and like with Michael Brown in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yep.
That's a young man's name?
Yes, in Ferguson.
His name is Mark.
Ferguson. Okay. You see something like that happen, and then these other cases, like with Freddie Gray in Baltimore. Okay. What happens is a news story breaks, and within 24, 48 hours, people have already made up their opinion on what happened. And in some cases, that can be dangerous. We see what happened in St. Louis. What happened was the young man who was with Michael Brown made up a story about what happened to him. Said he was gunned down like an animal. He was shot in the back. You remember all this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hands up,
okay.
Shoot.
If I'm somebody who's already predisposed against the police, maybe, or in that community, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, and I hear that, I'm going, That's I'm enraged.
Right.
So what happens is then they start rioting, looting, burning down the buildings, people going nuts. They're at war with the cops. Okay. It was all based on something that was not true. All right? So for a fair-minded person, the person I mentioned earlier, black or white, you go, how do you have a reasonable conversation with people that are going to be reactionary and not even give the justice system a chance to? So we have chaos based on a story that was made up. That wasn't
and
even
and then
true.
The demand for the cop's head.
Well, his life's over.
Right.
Darren Wilson's life is over. And
Michael Brown's life is over. What I'm saying is you have two lives.
But that
destroyed.
Wasn't an equal. That was not an
no,
equal.
I'm
no,
not,
no that
I'm
was not an equal situation. Michael Brown got into a fight with a police officer and was shot.
No, what I'm saying is you have two lives that are essentially over. Michael Brown is dead. Darren Wilson, I don't know if he'll ever find a job anywhere again. And the reaction was one way on. You see what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
Right, okay. And then this is
right, tell me what your problem. Michael sees what you're saying. Go ahead. I don't see what you're saying.
You have the social agitators, the people who live for these moments.
Right.
And they're going to stir the thing up for their own cause. And here's what's going to happen. Those that are watching from the outside and saying, but wait, people are saying that's not really what happened. And wait, there are other eyewitnesses saying that's not really what happened. And this hands up, don't shoot thing is a myth. So what can happen is that side can now react the other way and ignore the fact that many in the inner city are skeptical about the justice system and skeptical about the police. So in other words, this case was false. This case, the officer was
but
false.
That's how Black Lives Matter started.
Right. But what so the agitation now goes the other way, as opposed to, okay, listen, the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, from what we understand, was a justified use of force by police. But there must be a reason why you're so skeptical of the court system and of the justice system. So let's hear and understand what's going on. But normally we don't get to that point because everything polarizes. You have the Black Lives Matter and the other groups that agitate, that can be downright racist, that can incite hatred, that can even call for violence. You've got that going on one side. Then the other side is denying that there is any inequality, that there is any injustice. And we never actually get to sit
rationally. What I'm trying to get at is if it had not been for the scenario you laid out, the explanation of what happened, the outrage, the blow up, it becomes national news, international news. If this had simply been a case of a policeman shooting somebody, they have their investigative process that they normally go through. Darren Wilson's life would not be over because he would have been vindicated. And that's all there would have been to it. But because of the outcry and the fact that people said, we want this guy's head, Darren Wilson, he's got to be guilty because he's a white cop. He shot a black guy. Now Darren Wilson's life is over as well when the facts weren't even the ones that everybody was hearing.
But what I'm saying, yes, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that the racial agitators and the people who are quick to condemn the police or the officers or Darren Wilson never have to go back and apologize. They never have to go back and apologize.
Right.
They never have to go back and say, you know what, I was dead wrong on that.
Right.
He obviously, the FBI, the Justice Department sent in 40-plus agents to Ferguson, Missouri, to go after Darren Wilson to find him guilty of violating Michael Brown's civil rights.
And never could.
They exonerated him.
Right.
They exonerated him. So the whole thing was started on a lie. And nobody ever has to go back and says, nobody ever has to go back and apologize for that. Anyway, my point is, my overarching point is here, a lot of these cases are not because white police officers go out hunting black young men. They're because things go awry, perhaps, in a confrontation between a policeman and a person. and the person happens to be black because of the high rate of crime within the black demographic, males 15 to 30 years old, the police are necessarily coming into conflict with those that demographic more, so you're going to have the potential for more problems. But anyway, you have to base everything on a case-by-case basis, and you can't just otherwise, if you're going to just be judge, jury, and hangman within 24 hours of something that's on TV, then complete anarchy will rule. Michael, anyway, I preached enough there. Any thoughts on what I've just said? Go ahead.
The elephant in the room, of course, is the breakdown of the black family in America. And a lot of the breakdown really happens post-civil rights. The rate of illegitimacy has gone up. The amount of just overall fatherlessness as kids being raised has gone up. A lot of these kids are born into situations. They've got two strikes against them. And then some would say, well, look, that's the result of the welfare system and a lot of the government policies and things. And you even have the radical line that claims this is just another way to keep black Americans down. But I look at this and say, whatever the cause, this is a national problem. This is something that together, I don't mean for the government to fix, but I mean for people of conscience together to say, okay, how can we work together to build up those in the inner city? And as Christians, what can we do to restore the dignity of fatherhood and motherhood in these families and try to help restore and work together?
Right. Don't you think, though, that's a problem that's going to have to be solved within the black community itself? Because what I've seen is the culture now accepts fatherlessness as the new normal. So there's not any kind of moral judgment against 15-year-old girls having three babies out of wedlock. It's just...
Yeah, and we're not just talking about just shaming them just for fun.
That's just a way of life.
We're just talking about saying, listen, you're putting your kids behind the eight ball, so to speak, by doing this.
Well, you put yourself there because you have to drop out of school, and then you can't get a good job, and then it leads to a life of poverty, and it's a vicious cycle. But unless the black community itself comes together and says, we must address this as a people, it's not going to be solved by white people saying you shouldn't do this. Go ahead, Michael.
But can we, if you're going to change government policies, in other words, if the whole welfare system and the entitlement system is destructive, then that's the kind of thing where you have to work together to say, right, how can we help empower? And the other thing is that when a lot of these kids are born without fathers, they don't know how to be fathers. And you've got folks like Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, you know, a black leader with a mentoring program trying to help raise up young men to stand. I've got some of my friends, multi-ethnic, that are working in a prison ministry that reaches out to the kids of convicts, because otherwise the kids of convicts have a high rate of going into jail themselves, tries to reach them, and then these kids are reaching the parents. So I'm just saying there are ways together. At least we pray and we say, okay, God, give us constructive solutions and help us to stand with our black brothers and sisters to restore the family.
Well, absolutely. And David Brown, the police chief of Dallas, Texas, himself an African-American male who came out of the hood.
Right.
he's God's man for the moment, showing that, in fact, you can overcome a very difficult childhood to become a very successful person and a leader. And so I praise the Lord for him and his message. Thank you, Michael. What's your website?
AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. God bless, guys.
Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you.
All right, folks, have a great day. Keep listening to American Family Radio, the Bible teaching program of Dr. Alistair Begg is straight ahead.